Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Big week. I got a new laptop to review.
Can we put big in quotation marks?
Yeah.
Week.
Big week for the Apple Silicon, right? Big week for that. M2.
The M2.
Milestone.
It's not just a roadway in the UK anymore.
Nope. Just like the M1.
Yep. That's right.
More than one thing. M2 chip debuted in the 13-inch MacBook Pro. We did a whole live stream where we talked about the M2 and the MacBook Pro in detail. And for people who prefer podcast to live streams, I think we'll tack the audio of that video stream on at the end of this episode. So if you've got, if you didn't watch or didn't get around to it or don't do YouTube videos or whatever, we'll have that at the end where we talked extensively upon the dropping of the embargo of that MacBook Pro about the product and about the M2. So we'll cover that, I guess, technically later in this podcast, but you already heard us talk about it, or you'll hear us talk about it in a little bit. But the big news this week, Dan, the big breaking news, and you had the definitive story that everybody talked about because people want to know about the fact that Mail Merge is back in
Mail
Pages.
Merge.
It's Mail Merge week. The person who's been maintaining that website, that is, it does pages do mailmerge.com, got to flip the switch to yes again.
Yep. Wow. A long time coming. You know, so long, in fact, that I think probably anybody who cared about it, and I admit, it's probably a minority of people, but the minority of people really care about it, probably figured it was never coming back, right? Like,
yeah.
Who needs to mail stuff?
It's old. Well, I don't know if you heard Connected this week, but you should listen to it because just the segment about this, because they cite your story, but the best part is that Federico and Mike don't know what a mail merge is. And
yeah.
Steven has to explain it to them because they don't even know what it is.
I say, they're all youngins, though.
They are, but Steven's got an old soul.
That's right.
Mail Merge in Microsoft Word to do like labels when I was sending out cards to like incomparable members and stuff. And I had a list. And I needed to get it in the right format and print it on little labels to stick it on envelopes. And like, that's what mail merges are for. So they're not, you know, again, you're sending atoms using a postal service or you're generating PDFs or whatever. And I would not have bet that it would ever come back since it had been so long that it had been gone. But obviously, you know, I think maybe as part of this desktop class apps initiative a little bit where it's like, are there features that we ripped out that we should probably put back? And the answer is yes, because, of course, they ripped out a bunch of features from iWork, the iWork apps,
parallel.
when they made the code bases kind of connect so that they would run the same on iOS and macOS, more or less.
Yeah, and I get why it was a low priority feature, as we just discussed. But it does hearten me that they decided, hey, we do need to put this back in because either there have been a vocal minority clamoring for it, or just to be able to say, look, we can do everything your other word processors can do, right? And I think, you know, it's something that when you need it, it is very time consuming to replicate. So I wrote a post, which I linked to in the Mail Merge post a while back when I was trying to do, like you, I had book plates for my books and I was like sending them out. And oftentimes I would get a big influx around the time I released a new book. And it's like, well, now I got to send out like 30 of these things. And it's like, I'm not going to address all these envelopes by hand. That's a pain. So I figured out like, I can print envelopes with my printer. And to do that, I, you know, made a template and I was like, wait, you can't do this. So I found there was a bridge app called Pages Data Merge, which was basically slang Sal Segoyan of Apple Script fame.
We all know.
It kind of returned that feature, but it required a separate app. And then you had to open a spreadsheet in like Numbers or something. I mean, you could generate one, etc. It was a very handy little utility. And I laughed because when I opened up the feature, I was like, it feels like somebody looked at his app and it was like, oh, well, we could just build this back in. Right. So I feel like somebody out there was watching that and thinking, yeah, you know, we'll get around to it when we have that time. And then they finally had the time or money or whatever to do it. It seems like a well put together feature. I ran it through a test just to see how it worked. So, you know, you can either pull from like a spreadsheet or you can pull directly out of your contacts, which is kind of nice if you're like writing Christmas cards or something. Yeah. Who knows? You know, that's a handy usage. But I mean, you can also just generate PDFs that are all personalized or
right.
pulled from a spreadsheet. Even like, there's a lot of different things you could do with this if you wanted to sort of bend it to your will a bit. Because you can essentially just create a template with placeholders and then give it a whole spreadsheet of data and be like, generate me an individual PDF with each of these. So, yeah, who knows? There's probably a good reason.
Nine long years in the wilderness.
Though.
The wilderness yeah. years of mail merge and pages, but it's back.
Next is cards, Jason.
Oh, boy.
It's coming back.
Boy, yeah, let's bring back cards.
I will
add in the other, let's bring back iCards.
Yeah, iCards way back in the day. I will say, I think the other thing that was cool about this was that admittedly, 9 years later, showed us delivered on the promise of what that whole purpose of, you know, rebuilding the code base was, which was, and we saw this, we talked about this a bit in the wake of WWDC as well, is like, now we write a feature once and it basically goes everywhere. So now the iPad and even the iPhone can do mail merge, a thing that was never possible in the Pages versions there.
Right.
And that's because of the fact that all these code bases are basically the same. So, I mean, Apple's like strategy there kind of paid off. It just it's taken a long time to get sort of wrapped back around to where we were.
Yeah, it's it was a tough decision that made a lot of people angry in the moment. Yeah. Yeah. But I think Apple in the 2010s especially made a lot of those decisions where they knew where their platforms were going and they knew they needed to kind of bite the bullet and say, first off, we can't maintain two totally different code bases. And second off, you know, where it's going is that these things are coming closer together. So we need to get them all on the same page. And so you end up, pages.
Yeah.
We ran the numbers and a keynote response is that we need to be on the same pages. I quit.
Well done.
So they did it, and they made those hard decisions, and sometimes those make people really angry. I mean, they generally do, but they also can pay off. They don't always pay off, but they can pay off. I'm reminded of the Final Cut thing, which was not about unifying platforms, but it was about sort of like realizing that they had a lot of kind of technical debt and they wanted to do something different with Final Cut. And I think that, you know, everybody got really angry about it, but I think that they ended up kind of in a better place having done it. I know that there are probably still some people who are angry about it. I love Final Cut 10. I think it's great. There were a bunch of pro features that they had to add back in later. But they did it and they got there. And numbers and pages and I don't use pages. It's the least used of the three iWork apps. They have all, like, numbers for me, I use that a lot to do charts.
I use numbers a lot.
And that was my favorite thing about the desktop class apps thing is that's the app where I have hit on the iPad up against all the limits of, like, why can't I do this? So, you know, the desktop class apps thing kind of eliminates a lot of that by just saying, no, you can do it on the iPad too. It's fine. But like, and this one is not desktop class apps per se, but it feels like it's in the ballpark, right? Which is like, this is a feature that we had and we took it away when we moved to the new code base. And it's like, okay. And that means everybody gets it, right? It's mail merge on iOS too, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's the first time, right? You can do it on your phone. I mean, that's
sure. You're merging on your phone. You're generating, you know, envelope label templates on your phone if you want to.
You can print them out from your phone.
Yeah,
AirPrint. I mean,
you can.
I know.
You can.
What a weird world we live in now.
That's right. You can send form letters in the mail using your iPhone. It's
can't wait for it to send faxes. That would be really.
They use the video Newton in For All Mankind.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
For people who don't know, who aren't watching Apple TV Plus's TV show, the For All Mankind, which is really amazing, and you should watch it. Season 3, because it's an alternate timeline. This show is set in an alternate timeline where events in history change and things get accelerated a little bit. Anyway, there are Newtons in season 3, and they're way more functional than our Newtons ever were. But Dan and I have been delighting in seeing the message pad conversations that are happening.
The secrets for which, apparently, as we were seeing a tweet yesterday, are they built, like, they took Newton shells and, like, wrapped them around iPhones basically, which is super. I laughed when I saw that because a couple weeks ago, somebody posted in, I think, over in the Incomparable Slack, a behind-the-scenes video about the props on Star Trek Strange New Worlds that they rebuilt to recreate the original ones from the original series. And they have the, I think it was the communicator, which has a little like animation inside. And they're like, oh yeah, we just put an iPod Nano in there with the animation running in video. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's like that. First of all, brilliant. That is exactly what you should be doing if you're a prop designer. It's like, why should I build this thing custom when I can kind of, you know, take something off the shelf and pop it in there? But I also love the idea that the iPod Nano, a device that no longer is actively sold, is still in active usage there because it's just such a clever little solution to
a
problem.
It's a little video playing kind of thing.
Video playing device.
So my favorite thing about the For All Mankind story is that they created like the video camera accessory and dock for the Newton. So they had to kind of like match the Apple 90s
style
Newton design language for those products. It's fun stuff that only on Apple TV Plus will you see the Newton. So featured.
Yep. And also
Apple's like, oh yeah, all right, Newton sales are coming back now, baby. Product placement.
Man. I'm looking forward to
it. It is the most ridiculous product placement of all time, and I love it. It's great.
The when they'll all be playing video games on their Pippins and typing away on their e-mates, I don't know.
So can you tell me about your file sharing mystery? Because that was another thing that you posted. And it's funny because our friend Casey List seems to be dealing with a file sharing mystery as well.
Yeah, I think his ended up being an errant piece of software that he had installed that was causing some problems, or possibly a he zapped his NVRAM, which always a good classic move. Should rebuild the desktop right after that.
Yep, that's right. Hold down the shift key to stop loading your extensions.
Oh yeah, extensions. That's dangerous.
It's probably a conflict catcher if you want to. You can just hold down the space bar. Whatever.
I had run into this weird problem where I would be on my iMac and I'd want to grab a file off my MacBook Air, and I would try to just do the thing where you go to the Finder and you click on your computer and mount it and you take the file out, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like it wouldn't work. And I would try to mount it manually with the Connect to Server dialog box in the Finder, and it would time out and not connect. And I was like, what's going on? I could log in with screen sharing and I could log in with SSH. And I was like, well, this is weird. Like, and then the weirdest part was I would go to my MacBook Air and try to do the reverse and log into my iMac. I was like, this works fine. And so I spent some time, I kind of ignored it for a while because I had those workarounds, right? It's like, if I really need a file, I can screen share in and drop it in like iCloud or something like that. But I just had a moment where I had, you know, when something hits the breaking point and you're like, oh, I just need to solve this problem. And I like sat there for an hour, just sort of like, all right, I test the ports. Okay, it says the ports are like, it would reject a connection from on the SMB port from my iMac, but I would go to my MacBook Air and it's like, claims the port is open here. Well, that's weird. And it wasn't until I was like, all right, I need to narrow this down by testing for another source. So I need to check and see if it works on my iPhone. Now, you can connect to a file share in the iPhone using the Files app. I tried that. It didn't quite work. I was like, well, I want to run the test on the port. But I realized, well, I can't like SSH into some other server to do this. I have to run this port test directly from the phone because it's on the local network. And I had installed already the ISH app, which is the one that sort of creates a little Linux shell that runs directly on your phone, which is actually super handy in cases like this because it already had the same tools I needed. And I was like, oh, I'll check the port. And it's like, nope, it's not working here either. Great. I've narrowed it down. It's something that's wrong with the laptop. Was on the laptop, had previously checked the firewall, had tried turning the firewall off and turning the firewall on again or restarting, etc. Tried turning sharing off, turning sharing on again, thinking any of these things might like just sort of kick it into whatever it needs to be doing. None of that worked. In the interim, I decided to install the macOS Ventura beta on it, which led to an interesting story, which I'll tell in the podcast I vaguely alluded to in the post. Turns out, because this is a beta and it is a work in progress, and as we know, they redid the settings, the system preferences is now system settings. Mm-hmm. And as a result, some things have gone away or aren't there yet. There is no firewall management in system settings in Ventura.
Oh.
Nowhere. Yeah. So that was fun because I had a moment of, okay, so how do I do this? There must be a way to do it on the command line. So I spent some time researching that and trying to figure out like where are the firewall controls? Because I've used firewall controls on Linux. Like, I've configured those on, like, Linux servers that I've run. But the problem is there's different packages, and every distribution has a slightly different setup. And, like, but I know macOS is not using any of the standard tools that I would be using on Linux. So I had to dig around until I eventually found the right commands. And I have to say, once I found them, the tool for managing the firewall in macOS is actually pretty good. Like, it's not super arcane. You can type in a command, and it shows you all the services that are currently running through the firewall, and it tells you which ones are allowed and which ones are blocked. And sure enough, even though the firewall GUI in Big Sur had reported all the firewall stuff was open, the SMB daemon was not accepting connections. It just had it blocking all connections. I have no idea why.
Huh.
Is it possible I did something at some point? Sure. Is it possible an errant piece of software went awry and accidentally blocked that? Also possible. But it was really easy to just be like, hey, unblock that service. And everything fixed itself. That really did it. It solved the problem. It was literally just that issue that the firewall was blocking connections coming into the SMB port. And as soon as I unblocked it, everything went back to normal. So that felt really good because everything's working now. But it does leave you that lingering, like, I have no idea why that happened. And it's annoying that I had to, like, do all this research to figure out a way to, you know, what ended up being literally, I just enter a command and everything worked again. But yeah, I'm a little perplexed. I'm interested to see what happens in subsequent updates to Ventura, whether or not they put that back. Or whether they've decided, well, I mean, who really wants to mess with a firewall, right? Mm. But people do. And not every app is good about, you know, working with whatever API or what have you that they've installed to probably manage that, right? I'm sure there's a framework that says, like, hey, if you're an app that accepts network connections, you know, ping this framework and it'll request it and the system will give it to you once you've typed in your administrator password or whatever.
Right.
But
so,
I'm sure they're not all great at that.
So on Monterey, you can click on firewall options and preferences and
see
what's going
on.
I
said Big Sur a couple times. I meant Monterey. But
well,
yes,
either
yes.
way, right? And then,
yes, but the classic.
But in Ventura right now,
there is no option for that.
Yeah.
I have not been able to find it.
Let me just point out again, maybe this is fixed in beta 2, but in beta 1 of Ventura, startup disk is not visible in the list, although you can search for it.
Yeah, I searched for firewall and security, and I could not find anything.
Amazing. Yeah, well, it's a beta.
It's a beta. I'm willing to cut them some slack. I'm not going to, you know, castigate them for that because it's a work in progress. But I do think it is something that clearly, you know, people will need to find. Oh,
right.
You know what, Jason, I'm going to give myself an update because now I'm looking at beta 2, which came out the other day, and I think it's actually back.
Oh, breaking news.
Breaking news. Yes. Okay. It is. There is now a firewall advanced settings option that is under the network pane.
Oh.
But it was not there before. Actually,
or pane
it is,
or whatever it's called now.
Yeah,
if it's not a
section,
pain.
I don't know.
No pain, no gain.
Yep.
Sorry.
And there is an option to block connections. So that is apparently back in action, which is probably good. So
probably
yay
good.
For that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to cut our normal conversation a little bit short because we had a whole long conversation on Wednesday about the M2 and the MacBook Pro. And so if you have not watch that video, you can stay tuned for that after the beeps. And if you have, you could stop now because this is the end of the original content portion for Friday, June 24th, as is our custom. But, you know, next week we'll bring more excitement, undoubtedly, of some sort or other. Maybe it'll be mail merge. I mean, it's never going to match mail merge returning,
no,
right?
No, that's a high point.
It's never, but maybe something else will happen that'll be good too. Just not as good as that. So stay tuned after the beeps if you want to hear us talk about the M2 and the MacBook Pro. But otherwise, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Hello, and welcome to the Six Colors live stream. It's Wednesday, June 22nd at 10:30 a.m. Pacific. I'm Jason Snell, and he is Dan Morin. Hi,
Hello.
Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're live. Why are we live, you may ask? And I may ask that too, but let me see if I can let's see here. It's the desktop view now that you're seeing my desktop. Everybody can take notes. You can even see what's on my screen right now, which is my live stream setup for this. We're not kind of trying to hide anything here. This is what we're doing. I got some tea. I got some iOS devices that need to be updated to betas. And more to the point, I have before me a computer that isn't that exciting, but it's got an exciting thing inside of it, which is the M2 chip. So my review went live this morning, 6 a.m. Pacific, of the 13-inch M2 MacBook Pro. It's this thing here, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to take your questions. So if you are in the live YouTube view, if you've got questions, please send them our way, and we'll talk about those too. But let's start off with the questioner who's present. Dan.
Hello.
Hi, Dan. Do you have any questions about this?
I have one.
This guy?
Let's start off with one question right here. Why, Jesus? Why?
Well, let me give you a tour. Oh, look, we're going to the desk cam now. This is very exciting. I have so many cameras in my life. And I just want to give you a tour. This is the left side.
It's got two
USB-C ports and no MagSafe, unlike every other laptop that is a modern Apple laptop. Yes, I know they're still selling the M1 Air, but it's a value price and all of that. And if I turn this around, there's a headphone jack. Look, behold,
the magic.
The expanse of it. I'm trying to answer your question of why, Dan. And now that I've opened it up, let's just a little shot of my laundry over there. Look, it's the Touch Bar. It's this OLED device that goes above the function row called the Touch Bar. You may have heard of it in the past. Anyway, that is what's going on there. Yeah.
So fundamentally, right, this is unchanged. Let's aside from the processor, which we'll get to in a minute, but like fundamentally otherwise, this device is basically unchanged from the MacBook Pro we had before, the 13-inch.
Unchanged. It is the same case. It is the same Touch Bar. It is the same keyboard. It's the same ports. It is literally unchanged from its previous incarnation as an M1. And then, of course, wind it back as an Intel processor as well. It is basically the same old thing.
So should we then talk about the M2, since that is the exciting thing in here? How does it stack up, especially, you know, compared obviously to the M1? We've seen Apple's suggestions, but in terms of some more performance, real world, if you will.
Well, Dan, I'm glad you asked, because I come bearing charts, as
charts.
I so often do. I swear I don't make charts in my regular life. It's really just for
I do,
the internet.
And I never put them on the internet.
So I'm going to switch over to a little chart view here from Numbers. These are not exactly the same charts you saw on my story on sixcolors.com, which everybody should, of course, read and commit to memory and live your life according to the principles thereof. But it will give you some details here. Just an overview, top-level overview. Look, the M2 is faster than the M1. The M2 processor, which is by far the most exciting thing about this computer, is because it is going to be in lots of other computers, all of which will probably be more interesting than this one. And a better buy. But it's the kicking off this second cycle of Apple Silicon, which is really exciting because we only saw the one time through, and now we have some guesses about where they're going next. So it's based on the A15, which, as you may remember, is the processor that was in the iPhone 13 last fall, not the A14, which is what the M1 was based on. So it's adding a new generation of Apple chip development. So the cores are faster, and you can see that in the single core scores. The M2 is faster at single core than any of the M1s because the core is faster. Of course, the M1 Pro, Max, Ultra have way more cores. So in multi-core, an M1 Max will blow it out of the water. But, you know, still, again, compared to an M1, if you just compare it to the base model M1, it's faster. Similarly, in the GPU score, the GPU score is a lot higher on this machine than the MacBook Air that I tested, but that's because this has 10 GPUs.
You see, more cores.
And the Air has 7 GPU cores, but still, if you do it per GPU, it's faster. Again, it's like, all of these things are in the 5, 10, 12. It's very much like the A14 to the A15. It is faster. Yeah. It is truly faster. And I threw in the Xcode build thanks to James Thompson, who lets me have the crown jewels of Dice Bike pCalc several versions ago now. So who cares, right? I'll just put that on the internet, right, James? Anyway, Xcode build is a good example where It was faster, 2 seconds faster at building that project than the M1. But again, if you go to a max, it's 18 seconds. It's a lot. It's 10 seconds faster still. So the bottom line here is it is a more, it is like going from A14 to A15. It's a more modern equivalent. There are some other things in there. The video encoding.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the video encoding because that's the thing that they added.
I need to redo my test, and I didn't include the Final Cut Pro export because my test is based on 1080 source. And the fact is the 1080 export was the same. Hmm. My understanding is that the new encode blocks that are on the M2, which are custom silicon just for encoding and decoding video, they're using the ones that were on the M1 Pro and Max, but not on the M1. And what that gets you is faster encoding, hardware encoding of 4K video. But my understanding is that like the 1080 encoders were already there. So no changes. So I need to really build a 4K export test, which I did not have time to build for this project.
So for something that's specialized in encoding 4K feels like a little bit more of a niche, but it also speeds up decoding 4K, which could in theory help if you're consuming 4K.
Yeah, I mean,
video.
If you were watching a 4K stream and on battery, it would say battery because it would not have to do it using software. It would do it using the hardware decoder. But mostly, I mean, the truth is a lot of these are edge cases.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, bottom line is editing and processing 4K video on an M1 was not as good. And on an M2, it will be a base model M2. It will be good in a similar way. Again, there's a lot of asterisks there, but in mm-hmm. a similar way, at least in when it comes to encode and decode, as on the high-end M1 chip. So if you want to buy one of these things and 4K video is one of the things that you want to do, then you're there. I think it's really interesting that Apple's chip design, base model chip design, has gotten to the point where like these are so powerful. Unless you've got a real high-end application, even the M1 is so powerful that it's way more powerful than what most people need. And then you throw in like the new feature here is 4K video encode and decode.
Right,
it's like that's now
right.
in the base model M2. Like that's table stakes for Apple now is 4K video encode and decode, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, right. I mean, an additional fee, everything else in here is stuff that we, you know, they talked about, right? Like, because there's also, they discussed some improvements to the neural engine. I think the secure enclave,
so,
too. I'm not sure
so
how testable
next, it's the A15
are,
neural engine. It's the right. A15 secure enclave. David Schaub is pointing out, yeah, I mentioned 4K video. That's 4K video in ProRes and H.264 and H.265 AGVC. I don't know if there was no ProRes block in the M1 or if it was just for 1080. But yeah, I mean, basically, if you're working in video, this will be more capable. But again, if you're working in video, there's probably a better processor for you, which is a higher end M1. It's nice that they brought those features down. So if you do buy a 13-inch MacBook Pro and say, hey, why doesn't it do video like the other MacBook Pros? For this brief moment, it sort of does, and that's a nice thing.
Does raise an interesting question in terms of the future of the M2 lineup. Now that we've taken features that were in the Pro and the Max in the M1 and shifted those down to the M2, you know, the base model, can we infer anything about future, you know, M2 Pro, M2 Max chips coming out? And, you know,
it's fun to speculate, right? Because
sure,
they took what you might consider the crown jewels a little bit, which is like this super dedicated hardware. This is essentially what they were trying to do with those MPX modules in the Mac Pro for Intel, right? Which is like, we're going to just do custom silicon that does all of these video encodes because we have so many video pros working for us. Well, okay. So they put that in the high-end M1s, and then they're like, yeah, we'll just stick that in the low-end M2. We don't care. So what is 8K? Is it like, what do they do to up the ante, assuming they do, in terms of what the specialized processing they put into the M2 Pro, M2 Max, into Ultra, M2, whatever comes after Ultra, Mega, Super.
Awesome.
I want to also just a little chart party here before we move on from charts, put the other angle that I tried to do in the story, which is upgrading from Intel, because the truth is almost nobody is buying an M2 having bought an M1, right? I mean, our audience, maybe, okay. But most people keep a computer for more than a year and a half. So they're going to be coming from Intel still. And I don't have a vast library of Intel machines available here to test, but I do have my wife's 2018 MacBook Air, i5, and I do have my iMac Pro Xeon 8-core. So I did put some charts together using those tests just to be clear what we're looking at here. And the answer is what we're looking at is, remember how big that leap was with from Intel to M1? Well, if you're still on Intel, that leap is now bigger, basically. Like, right. Coming from an Intel 2018 Intel i5 MacBook Air, which is not a bad computer at all, but you're talking about sometimes it's double, sometimes it's triple, sometimes it's six times, sometimes with the GPU, because you got the onboard graphics, Intel onboard graphics, it's like 10 times. It will be a lot faster. So the truth is, the big story for M2 right now is for laptops like this one, and especially I think that M2 Air, mm-hmm. is not people going from M1. It's people getting off of Intel finally, and they're going to have that same experience, except right. even more so now.
And it's sort of affirming from Apple's perspective, like, to show consumers, look, we're not sitting on our laurels. We're going to constantly be iterating. We're coming out with new, we have a roadmap, yeah. right?
And this is just like the iPhone roadmap, right? Where they're iterating. Yeah. The question is now that we're almost at the point where there'll be an A16. So is the M2 generation going to be, I think there's an argument to be made that the M2 generation staying on A15, A16, I think there's some perception that A16 is going to be another like little step forward, and then there's a big process shift on A17. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, you could see maybe that the M3 would pick up the A17 and skip over the A16 entirely. But still, the message is Apple Silicon moves forward and they're going to keep iterating. And, every year it seems like there's a 8, 10, 12, 15% boost in the cores. And then you put all the cores together and maybe you add cores to some systems, and the GPU cores have a boost and maybe there are added cores there, and they do occasionally refurbish, the neural engine or the secure enclave. And so you pick that up too, and they just kind of keep on grinding. So if you're not in the market for an M2 small laptop, just wait a while, and then there will be an M3 that has even more. And like I said before, hopping to Intel will give you a big boost. But of course, if you're on an M1 and you wait 3 years, you'll go to M3 and you'll get, won't get 100% speed increase, but you might get a 20% boost by 20 or 30 by jumping two generations. I should also mention the memory bandwidth. The memory is faster, so that adds into the speed here, as well as using that. It's the same memory that is used on the M1 Pro and Max and Ultra, but not on the original M1. That also enabled the 24 gig RAM maximum. So the memory is faster. The SSD controller is faster. So there's a lot of stuff going into
little improvements across the
board. People have asked, and we'll get to some questions in a minute, I promise, but people have asked, like, what does it feel like to use it? And the answer is, it's an Apple Silicon Mac. It feels no different other than it's faster. And for me, the challenge is I don't use an M1 Air or any other M1 base model as my primary Mac these days. I use Mac Studio with an M1 Max. And so, it's hard to compare other than to say, it's definitely faster than my M1 Air. It's definitely that all of those things go into that feeling of, for lack of a better word, snappiness. The
sure.
idea that your RAM and your SSD are really fast. Like sometimes, and this has been the case for years now, sometimes user perception of speed is about storage almost more than anything else. I mean, these days it's your network too, but like storage is so much of it, where whether you're paging to disk with virtual memory or whether it's just I got to load a big file. A while ago, our computers got way faster than our drives, and it ended up being wait for storage, wait for storage, wait for storage. And faster memory and faster SSD really helps, as much as the faster cores and the faster GPU. It all kind of feeds in there.
Right. And the other thing we can kind of take away from this is the M2 MacBook Air ships next month at some point. We don't know when. But we've seen in the M1 generation, basically all an M1 is an M1 is an M1, right? All those Macs that had M1s in them basically had identical performance.
Yeah. Yeah. So
the only the same with the Air. Really.
Yeah, it'll be the exact same. I mean, it'll be different in that I believe they're going to do the thing where you start with fewer GPUs and then you add them in. Although my understanding is that basically when you configure the
even the default, yeah, there's one base model I think that has fewer
GPUs.
That may be it. Yeah,
but if you compare, if you configure them the same, this laptop right here and that Air, if you make the specs the same, I believe the price is the same. So, and the performance will be the same with one exception, and that exception is that this has a fan,
right?
And the Air does not have a fan. However, now, I mean, and we don't know the thermal characteristics. My use of this thing, like, it's just as hard to get the fans to do anything as it is on the M1s. I think you would really, and it really is the GPU that's going to throw out the heat, that's going to cause any potential throttling in that Air. So what I would really say is, unless you expect to heavily, heavily, heavily use the GPU for a very long period of time, and need it to not throttle, which is a very specific use case. And and again, there's probably a more powerful product that's better for you, but maybe this is all that you can afford. And so, like, it's going to be better than the Air in that one use case. But I think in most, like, 99% of use cases, it's not going to be any different than the Air. And then, by the way, the other change is that there's more battery in this thing because it's heavier and bigger. Right. There's more battery than there is in the Air. And so it has better battery life. And if you're somebody who absolutely positively has to have the longest battery life possible and is shopping between this and the Air, this will give you more battery life. And if you don't care about the touch bar and don't care about MagSafe or any of those things, and battery is what matters to you, again, I'm grinding to try to find use cases for this laptop, because I think it's not for most people, but those are there if you need them.
That sort of takes us to sort of the big two-part question here, which is, one, who is this product for? And two, why is Apple still making it? Like, what is Apple's point in doing it, and who is it for?
Apple's doing it. I think I said this in the review. Apple is ultimately doing this as a business decision. Oh, like on the video, you can see my mug is in the reflection there. That's awesome. Apple's doing this because it has a product line that is very popular, which is the MacBook Pro. And there are certain people and companies that will only buy a MacBook Pro. They view it as a professional-level product. It's more sturdy than a consumer product. And that the MacBook Air is not a professional product, so they're going to buy the MacBook Pro. And anybody who's worked in a big company and you've got those, your IT guy, and he's like, I don't want these, you know, little cheap laptops. We're going to get the Pro model. And, you know, is that reality? I would say no. But it's perception. And it drives sales. So Apple's got to have an affordable-ish Pro laptop. And the gap between the 13 and the 14-inch MacBook Pro is enormous.
Right. There's a similar sort of problem on the desktop as there is on the laptop side here, right? Which is, there's good stuff at the low end.
The mini?
There's good stuff if you want to jump up, but that middle is kind of
exactly.
Big.
And I mean, and when we say it's like $800 difference, like, keep in mind, it's $800 difference. But that's, I mean, like, it's $1,200 to $2,000.
It's almost half the cost of the machine.
Percentage-wise, it's huge. So that's part of the issue, is Apple needs to have a Pro laptop that people will buy. And I think the reason it's their second best-selling laptop is literally that companies, I suspect it's more companies than individuals. But I think that there's also just a class of user in general that is never going to buy a MacBook Air, and this says Pro on it, and even if it doesn't have those features, it'll be interesting to see how many people look at this laptop and reject it and say, well, I might as well just get the Air at this point. But I think Apple can't afford to have the Pro line start at $2,000, so this product exists. And if you're saying to yourself, well, why don't they make this in the style of the new laptops and sell it for this price, I think the answer is they can't. Given the margins that they would want to have on that product. And I think they will get there. I suspect there will be a new 13-inch at some point that will be not as good as the 14-inch, but nicer. Because I have a hard time seeing the 14-inch coming all the way down, right?
Right. I mean, so we talked about this before with MKEEP around the models that weren't Retina for a while and the models with optical drives.
Yeah, those bad iMacs and all those
things. The holdovers
things.
Until they sell, can make the things.
Well, those iMacs where it's like, why is there an iMac with a spinning disc during that period? iMac with a spinning disc or a disc drive or whatever, or they made the eMac at one point. The answer is always the same, which is there is a market that sells, a channel they're selling into that won't get the new thing, but will get the old thing. And so they're like, all right, we'll keep it around, and like nobody's happy about it. I am sure that everybody at Apple knows very well how compromised this product is, and I'm sure you and I were talking about this. They didn't want this to be the first M1 Mac,
no.
But this is where they ended up, and so here it is.
That's the other group that this is for, is people who need a new Mac right now because you can't get the Air yet. So you might be able to get one of these even there. A little iffy in some of the configurations, it sounds like, but should we take some questions?
Let's do it.
I'll throw back to a question from Jacob, which he said, I don't currently have a modern Mac and don't have any urgency to get one. Should I wait for the Air or get this Pro? I think we were kind of just discussing that, but if you
don't get this computer. I mean, like, seriously,
if you can wait, right?
All of those caveats I listed there where it's like, if battery is by far the most important thing, or if you do a job that requires, or play games or whatever, that it requires that extended GPU performance and it must never throttle. But like, realistically, no, you shouldn't buy this computer. You just shouldn't. You shouldn't, because that Air is going to have all the performance, more or less, that this thing has. In almost every circumstance, it'll have all the performance. And having spent some time with that Air at the event, it is, because I don't have one. Nobody has one, as far as I know. They like, seriously, this isn't one of the people are like, oh, but you secretly have one. No, I don't.
There's on the desk. There's
but I got to there. Use it. I got to use it. Look, you can look at my desk. Where is it? It's not there. Okay, it's just not there. So, it's better in every way, right? It's got MagSafe. Like, and people are like, yeah, MagSafe is not that important. It's not just MagSafe, right? It's MagSafe and a port. Because you've got two ports, and when you're plugged in on power, you have one port. Right. And with MagSafe, when you're plugged in, you have two ports. It's twice as many ports. It's
there's been a lot of consternation over webcams, and this one, the Air actually has a better webcam too. It's got a 1080p, and this one still only has 720.
Yeah. Plus, it's got the extended screen, which I know not everybody loves the notch, but what the notch effectively does is move the menu bar up above where the current screen is, and so you're getting more screen space for content.
It's larger. It's like 0.3 inches larger.
It's
than
a bigger,
the Pros.
Yeah. It's a bigger screen. It's got a better webcam. It's lighter. It's thinner, it's prettier, it's got MagSafe.
Doesn't have a touch bar.
It doesn't have a touch bar. Again, touch bar lovers, buy this, because this is the last Mac probably ever with a touch bar.
We say that now.
I said that last time. Didn't happen. So that there's another use case. But yeah, basically don't buy this computer. Like, I it's so weird to say that, but it's like, it's not bad. Like, in my story, I say there's three things about this computer, right? It's an M2. So what's the M2 all about? We've covered that. Number three is, boy, this is an old design, right? Like, it's just, it's the 2016 era, and that's all. And then the one in the middle is like, out of context, it's fine, right? Like, it's a lot cheaper than the other Pros. It's got the brand new chip in it. If you want the touch bar or the battery life or whatever, it's like kind of like an old MacBook Air in some ways. It's a throwback. The thing that destroys it is they also introduced the M2 Air. And it looks like such a better product in almost every single dimension that I just don't know. I can't recommend this to anybody. Like, if you're like, let me at them, I want this product, great, you should get it. But, you know, I can't. Generally, I couldn't recommend that.
Yeah. We got a lot of commentary, but not a lot of direct questions on this.
Yeah,
I think, in part, because there's not. I mean, somebody points out that Kyle pointed out that playing Baldur's Gate 3 is. Which is the current poster child for gaming metal, might be useful on this machine. That's true. That's the kind of gaming. And they did talk a lot about gaming during WWC in the keynote, which is always fascinating whenever they do. But they did seem to be pointing out how, you know, intensive gaming is. And because this is something that does have an active cooling system, maybe you can push the envelope a little further. But I think even that is kind of.
Yeah, even there, how far do you need to push it for it to be worth it? Right. Like, I don't know. I've got a question here from John Waller that I think is what we said, but I just want to reinforce it, which is John says, I think the MacBook Pro 13 is for corporate employers. Absolutely. So at least for my company, these 13-inch MacBook Pros are the default. And I 100% agree with John. I bet you this product exists primarily because everybody who's involved in especially corporate sales and fleet sales. And, you know, on those analyst calls every quarter, they're like, let me read to you about our Fortune 500 inroads that we are making. Right. And this is it. Like, this is why they sell these laptops.
About that is that Apple specifically made a version that is more or less identical, but without the touch bar. And it's not that version that stuck around, right? It's the touch bar version, which suggests they had boxes of touch bars left.
I mean, I joke about it, but I do wonder if they made a lot of touch bars, and so they just want to keep putting them in computers. Also, maybe there's this continuity thing where they've heard from a certain customer set that the touch bar is important, or they want all of their, like, talk about corporate buyers, or they're like, look, everybody's got a touch bar, so we want to keep going with that. But like, what is that even? I don't even understand it. So yeah, I'm going back to the first thing. There's like boxes and boxes of touch bars in a factory somewhere, and we don't want to put these in the earth. We don't want to bury them.
No.
So we're going to put them in here instead as long as we can.
Hope they're not making more though. But the factory has been wound down.
Don't do that. That'll be a real banner move in 6 months if they say the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Touch Bar is available for a limited time.
supplies last.
And then they literally just make a new one that just has a MagSafe and a functional. It's not like they would need to do the notch, do the micro LED, do ProMotion. Like, the next version of this product that I thought was the version we would see here, honestly, is MagSafe and a regular function row. That's it. But they didn't do it because they got to move those touch bars.
That requires redesigning.
There's a very key market segment we know nothing about that relies on the touch bar. And so
touch bar above all.
Yeah. Maybe they should sell a standalone touch bar just to move them.
This is not at all Mac related, but someone wants to know why the lava lamp's
Shrey
not on.
Shrey asks, why is the lava lamp not on? And the answer is because I am, I'm bad and should feel bad. And, I'm going to have to open the home app and, it's a whole thing, and I don't
wait until Matter comes out. You'll be able to just turn that lava lamp on like that.
Yeah, with a snap. Wow, that is pretty good.
You know, the interoperability is high.
So accidentally installed the beta, and then had to reinstall, and I lost a bunch of my preferences, including the ones for home control. So there, the lava lamp is now lit.
Okay, I can turn it on from here. One second. We got a question from Chris who asks, hi guys, Creative here, currently using a maxed out Retina MacBook Pro 15 2013, which crawls when I'm in Zoom with Photoshop, Slack, Notion, Keynote running, etc. Will an M1 Air or M2 Air fare better? Well, I think that's
two things. So the M1 Air is going to do great, right? Like the M1 Air is going to, for Chris, is going to be a huge step up from the 2013 Pro. You're not going to get the MagSafe, and you're not going to get the expanded screen. You save some money, but you're not going to get those things.
If that's a thing, if you are creative working in video, that might be something that you
right. Want. And I'll also say, when you talk about Photoshop and Slack and lots of apps running, the other thing I would say is having the option of getting more memory and having it be faster memory. Like, if you are in situations where paging to disk and all of that, like, the M2 is going to do better at that than the M1. I think you'd be happy with either, but honestly, if the price difference doesn't dissuade you, and it's not a big price difference between the M1 Air and the M2 Air, I would hold out for the M2 Air, because I think the M2 Air, again, I only have spent a little bit of time with it, and we need to see what it is in reality and not just at Apple Park, which is not reality. You pass through a gate that, Dan, you were there. We passed through into whatever Apple Park is from reality. And then, yes, a brief distortion was felt, and then we were inside Apple Park. Anyway, but it sure looks like that's going to be a winner. So that's what I would say.
I'll add to that. I mean, as with all these things, right? If you can wait, you know, the computer that you buy, an M2 will probably last you a bit longer than M1, maybe only a year or two, but right, it's newer. So as with anything, if you buy a newer, more powerful, slightly more powerful thing, it'll last slightly longer than the older, slightly less powerful thing. But I agree that they're both huge improvements of that. And, you know, there are points, David just pointed out that you can get a refurbished M1 Air for like $850. So there is also that option, right? You can get a cheaper model. So that's pretty nice too. Rob asked, at some point, do they need a different name than Pro? I use my laptop for work as a manager. I consider it Pro work, but I don't need the power of a Mac Pro. I think that is an interesting question about branding. Like, Apple has very much set up this Pro dynamic here, and not everybody who considers themselves a Pro uses a MacBook Pro, and not everybody who uses a MacBook Pro considers themselves a Pro. Is it still the right brand or title to be using?
I will refer you to our statement about corporate purchases, right? Like, on one level, you can't escape it because there's some talk. Mike Hurley was talking about this on Upgrade yesterday, that are they going to bring Studio to other parts of the line? Because Studio has some implications of professional work while being different from Pro. And it's possible that Apple could redefine other product lines to involve Pro and Studio versions that were different. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they will do that, but like the Mac Pro, right? Like, nobody's just randomly going and getting a Mac Pro.
Sure.
But I got a Mac Studio, and I had an iMac Pro before, so okay, fair point. But like, I don't need a Mac Pro, but the Mac Studio, I'm like, oh, okay, that speaks to me. It's more than a Mac Mini or an iMac, but is not a Mac Pro. Could they do that with the MacBook line? I think they could. The question is, how would they get there? And the challenge they've got is they've got the Air name, mm-hmm. and people love the MacBook Air, right? This is being trapped by your success, right? The MacBook Sure. Air, as we have detailed many times, Apple tried to kill it, right? Like, Apple really did try to murder the MacBook Air. They left the Retina version on sale, and then they came out with the 12-inch Retina MacBook, the non-Retina version at $999, and they did the Retina MacBook, and they did the MacBook Escape, which was essentially a version of this thing that's right before me now, except without even the touch bar. And people didn't buy them, and they kept buying the MacBook Air. And finally, Apple's like, okay, geez, fine, Retina MacBook Air, fine, I hope you're happy. And they were happy, because that's what people wanted.
Yeah.
And now, it'll be interesting to see, because like, the M1 MacBook Air is part of this line that was the Retina MacBook Air of sort of like, we're sorry, the thing you love is back. The M2 MacBook Air is not a replay of the MacBook Air design, right? The wedge is out. It's still thin and light, but they're redefining what the MacBook Air is. Well, that's great. But like, I still think they're maybe kind of trapped in the fact that they have to use that name, and that's just how they're going to be for a while. And MacBook Pro may be a similar thing, that their two best-selling laptops are those two laptops, the Air and the 13-inch Pro, that that we all go like, why? And the answer is because somebody's got to buy the base model Pro. So Apple may just be trapped in there, but they may try to experiment with a Studio brand. I like Mike's idea of experimenting with the Studio brand as sort of a mid-range that is pushing the Pro up and saying, like, would corporate buyers accept a MacBook Studio for their managers, people like Rob, instead of a MacBook Pro, because they still feel like it's special and it fits what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, let's not forget too, the Pro made the jump to both the iPhones and the iPads as well. So it's firmly entrenched across all of Apple's
right. But the, product there's that rumor point. about
the larger iPad.
Larger iPad. And that and again, that's one of those things, like, larger iPad, but not an iPad Pro. What would it be? And Mike immediately said iPad Studio. And I'm like, maybe, especially if you've got like a story with Apple Pencil or a new version of Apple Pencil and you've got the big screen to write on. So Studio, right now, all we know is the Mac Studio exists. Is that part of something larger, or is it a one-off that's just for the Mac line, the Mac desktop line? I don't know. But yeah, it's a good question, Rob. I think if Apple were to do it today, they would have a very different experience. But the challenges they have... products that sell with names on them that are the signifiers of what they are, which is successful branding, right? It's successful, but you don't go to the people who buy your products and say, well, we've changed the rules now. Like, now you'll buy this one. And they're like, because they'll just say, no, I won't buy that. And that's, I think that has been a story of some of these Apple, weird Apple branding decisions is that, which is that they're kind of trapped.
I thought this was an interesting thought experiment from Age. If this had the same design as the new M2 MacBook Air, would it be a recommendation? I mean, I'm going to assume that means including not just the, you know, the same design language, but also like a MagSafe port and et cetera. If it were sort of more of a, you know, a 13-inch version that was on par, that version that you kind of expected to get, is there still something, I guess, to recommend it at that point? I mean, it seems more compelling, but, you know, it's still a model that is not the higher end.
Yeah, I mean, let's do the thought experiment, which is what if this is the computer that we have before me, but with no touch bar and with MagSafe, right?
And a better webcam.
And the smaller bezels with the notch at the top.
Right. So they're very similar at that point.
Right. Like they were in the M1 generation.
Sure.
And what I would say is then it's a more straightforward thing, which is, again, let's assume that the thermal characteristics of the M2 are similar to the M1 and that it's not going to throttle a lot. You're trading the lighter profile of the Air for the fan and battery in the Pro. And at that point, it is exactly the same conversation as we had about the M1 Air and Pro, which is what matters to you more.
Right.
And I'm always going to choose thinner and lighter because that's me. But I know people who will always choose battery, because battery, they're always running out of battery, or they just don't care about the size or the weight. They just care about the battery. So it is weird, like. I think the challenge here is that there are no performance characteristics different performance characteristics other than throttling based on thermals.
Right.
And like, you know what this product should have is it should have a base, and maybe this will happen. It should have a base model M2 and a build configuration with an M2 Pro.
Yep.
And maybe they'll get there because then you solve this problem other than the lack of new stuff in it, you would solve the problem of how do I differentiate what makes this Pro while keeping that low-end price point model in there. Because this is a much more interesting computer if for halfway between it and the 14-inch, you can get a configuration with an M2 Pro, and maybe they'll do that down the road.
Right, and that it feels, again, very much like the problem they've had on the desktop side as well.
Exactly.
Which you can't get easily from the M1 to a studio.
Yeah, if there's a failing in the Apple Silicon transition so far, it's that, which is, and I understand why they did this, but like, I expected the Mac Mini to have a config. A Mac Mini with an M2 makes sense, but a Mac Mini with an M2 and an M2 Pro configuration, right? And likewise, an iMac with an M2 makes sense, just like the M1, but a built-to-order iMac with an M2 Pro or a high-end configuration with an M2 Pro, it makes sense. And that's the missing piece in the M1 generation is you couldn't choose between base and Pro. And I imagine that's because of the differences between the two processors. There are a bunch of differences, including the memory and all that. And also just that they were trying to make a transition and keep things steady, but now we're in M2, right? So are they going to finally do that and let the user choose to build up from an M2 to an M2 Pro?
I think you could add to that potentially prioritization with supply yields and stuff like that, having to decide where are the chips going that we have and what do we want. Like, it seems obvious that we want to put base model chips in a lot of things because those are the things that are lower priced. Therefore, we will sell a lot of them. They are the popular, you know, models, and then building up to that, you want to get the power, demonstrate that you can bring the power, and also that the high-end users are going to have something.
Right.
That middle range is tough, right? There's people who will definitely buy it, but I wonder if that's just a smaller segment of the market, or they see that as not as big. They'll get there eventually, but it wasn't a top priority.
David Schaub says the M2 Pro is a different thermal envelope, and that's absolutely true, but I think what's interesting is that this one has a fan, right? And also,
right.
Apple controls what processors go in it. So they could say, when an M2 Pro exists, they could say, you can get an M2 Pro in this, but only a certain configuration. And above that, you can't go, and you can't get a Max. And we're like, we're constraining it in this way because of the thermals of this particular computer. But because it's got a fan, you know, I feel like they could probably do it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like they could probably do it. And the same goes for any of those desktops that have a cooling system. If there's a cooling system, then you could probably offer a build-to-order or a high-end configuration with it. I think that's going to happen. I think it's inevitable. And it was just, they weren't willing to do it. They weren't able to do it.
I would also point out, if you can get, I mean, with the 14 and 16-inch MacBook Pros, if you can put an M2 Pro in those, you can put an M2 in them if you want it to go down. So therefore, a M13-inch that was designed to be newer on par with those would probably be able to support either.
Yeah, yeah. That's the fascinating thing about this turn of the wheel of the M2, is that they got it all done, and now it's sort of like, well, what's next? What do we do next?
Yeah.
And how does it differ from the M1 cycle, and how does it stay the same from the M1 cycle? And we don't know. That flexibility. I mean, in some ways, I'm surprised that they made the Pro and the Max, and I know they binning and all of that, but like, they offered kind of more chip variety than I thought they would. What they haven't done is like change the like cell based on clock speed or something like that. It's all the same chip, and then their variation is in cores of GPU and CPU. So when they go the second time around, will they add some more variety? I think they should. Whether they will or not is an open question, but like, I think they absolutely should. That the Mini and the iMac and this guy right here ought to be available in some different chip configurations, and you should be able to go up from that. It would be a shame if they introduced a bigger iMac that comes only in Pro or Max, and the smaller iMac is only in the base model. You do that if the cooling just isn't there, but it would seem weird that they built that iMac to have not.
Again, you built the machine. You can decide.
I've had people at Apple tell me specifically, like, we design these chips for the computers that they're in. It's not one of those things where, like, we're seeing the M2 now, but like, they know every computer the M2 is going into. They designed the chip and what those computers were going to be together. And that's the secret sauce that they have, that taking Intel processors off a shelf, they didn't have. And so they know, they have a strategy for it. I hope that there's computers have been built with both chips in mind, because I think that would help provide some user choice and flesh out their product line in a non-confusing way, right? Instead of adding more products, you just add more configurations of existing products. And then, you don't have like, well, there's this iMac and then this iMac, and they do different things. It's like, well, no, there's the iMac, and you can... It can be in two sizes,
make it better.
And you can choose your chips, and that's it. And we're done here. That's clearer, right? And the Mac Mini, then again, Mac Mini and Mac Studio, it's like, okay, those are very similar products with completely different chip designs in them. And I don't know.
An Intel Mac Mini floating out there too.
Yeah.
David also asked, are we expecting an M2 and M2 Pro Mac Mini next year? I think this is an interesting question about... It took a long time for Apple to go from the M1 to the Pro and the Max, right? It took the better part of a year to go from shipping an M1 to shipping the MacBook Pros that had the higher versions of the chips in them. The M2 is still not shipping in huge quantities, right? The Air is not out yet. One would assume Mac Mini and iMac making a transition to the M2 would be kind of a foregone conclusion. But in terms of those higher versions of the chips, like the Pro and the Max, do we think the timeline looks similar to the M1 evolution, or maybe they've gotten this down a little better and the Pro and Max chips might come sooner? I think there's a question of that, and there's a question of Windows, when Apple likes to release certain products. So...
Yeah, supply chain to me is the thing that hovers over all of this, right? The legacy nodes and all the other monsters that are lurking out there. That
this Air was supposed to ship months ago, according to a lot of reports.
By some accounts, this was supposed to be last fall.
Yeah.
And it is not yet shipped, right? It's hoping for July. And so there's what Apple wants to do and what Apple will be able to do. Like that they have, I have no doubt that they're going to have products ready, but can they manufacture them at a scale that will allow them to sell? Because you don't really want to announce a product and have it be unavailable, right? Like that's not great. Backordered is okay, but if like nobody can get it, that's not.
You're not in the business of selling products.
They want to take your money and give you a computer and walk away, and the deal is done, right? They don't want to make you wait and think and like, maybe I don't need that computer, or maybe I'll buy a different computer or whatever. They want to fulfill you right in the moment. So that to me is the big question. I have very little doubt that a new Mac Mini and a new iMac. And by the way, I know that they didn't turn these products over very often in the old days, but I think, we'll see if I'm right, I think in this era, Apple is going to turn those products over a lot faster. They don't want to sell an M1 Mac Mini unless it's cheaper. Tim Cook.
The M1 Air, the reason that's still holding down the bottom
like,
lineup.
Like, no, move it through. M2 time. Like, just put it in. Like, this one, this laptop here is the perfect example of that, right? Which is, this is the M1 with an M2 in it of the same thing.
Right.
It is no different in any way, unfortunately, than its previous one. They just put the M2 in it. And so why would they not do that? New iMac,
knowing the chips that are going in which computers, if you're setting out to design a brand new iMac as they did, you don't think, okay, this will be great for that M1 chip, and then when the next generation comes around, we'll have to redesign it to accommodate the M2. No, they're planning ahead, right? They presumably are designing enclosures and computers that can be like, we can swap the M2 into this, we can swap the M3 into this. Yeah, 3 or 4 years from now, we might need to redesign it for the next generations, but you got to think that they're planning ahead for at least 3 or 4 years of this is what this is going to look like. And we're going to make it easy on us to just swap in a new chip and sell a new machine.
It's a surprise for us, but it's not a surprise for them. They know exactly what they're doing, and we have to guess. So, yeah, I would think that anytime they redesign an enclosure, they are having some serious conversations about what the roadmap looks like, right? That you don't design a brand new iMac and say, oh, in 2 years, the M3 is not going to be able to take it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe you design it and say, we've decided there's never going to be a pro chip in there. Maybe you do that. I would hope you wouldn't, but maybe you do. But I don't think that they're getting surprised by all of this, right?
Right.
Like,
what were you working on?
The chip
on?
Guys did what? Like, I don't think that is happening.
We had a question about camera setups.
Yeah, I mean, let's do it because people like to know behind the scenes, and you can see my screen right here. So, what camera is this? This is the infamous studio display camera. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look terrible. The overhead is a Sony Alpha. Which model is that? The one that everybody has. All the streamers have. That's the Sony Alpha. It's up there. I'll get you. Oh, this will be good. I'm going to switch to the handheld.
Oh, we're going shaky cam.
Oh, that's interesting. If I switch to the handheld, the question goes away. So I'm gonna delete that. That's weird. Okay, we'll go to shaky cam. That's exciting. So this is Camo Studio, because I'm not on the betas on these computers. This is Camo Studio running on my iPhone Mini 13. And this will be great because I'm in a garage. Oh, look what's up there. That is the Sony Alpha, and it's shooting down at the desk. And look, I'm going to even... Whoa, did I just blow your minds now that they're shooting up and shooting down? Look, they're buddies. Anyway, those are what the cameras are, so not that exciting.
I have to wait for the YouTube stream to catch up because I can't see any of
you. You can't see anything. No, sorry about that. Dan is not getting... I'm not paying enough on Ecamm Live, which is how we're putting this together, to feed my video back to Dan. That is a pro feature.
I use my imagination.
I am
it's free.
Not involved with in any way.
This is a 2017 iMac webcam right here.
That's nice. I like what you've done with that.
Thank you. Anything else?
We have talked for almost an hour about a product that is not that interesting, but a chip that is interesting. So maybe we are uh, maybe we're done with
this one. I think so.
But we're going to, you know, I would say anytime that there's especially an embargoed something where I've got it and hopefully with a more interesting computer than this one. So look, let's, people again are going to have the conspiracy theories. Like, let's cross our fingers that I get a MacBook Air. Cause I don't know. I would love to see that. Gimme. So when those things happen, we will try to do these six colors live streams afterward for everybody, so that because usually there's a gap of a couple of days where I've got it and nobody else has it other than reviewers, and I can take your questions and show you in more detail with more interesting things than this laptop, which if you've seen a 13-inch MacBook Pro, you've already seen this laptop other than the chips. And if you're not a Six Colors member, I encourage you to try that out. We love your support. And we are going to start doing some more live streams that are members only in the future. Yeah. I haven't done that yet, but it's coming. We just haven't done it yet. So, but we'll always do some big public live streams for things like this. So whether you're a member or not, thank you for watching the live stream or playing it back later. And anything, any last words, Dan?
No, I don't have any equipment here, so. I'm just gazing upon with jealousy and waiting for the day I can replace this aging Intel iMac.
All right. Well, you know, one of these days we'll get you in the. I'll send you something, a pre-release something in a pneumatic tube from here, the Six Colors pneumatic tube system that runs from the Bay Area to the Boston area, and we'll
very specific.
We'll handle it. All right. That is this live stream. Thanks for watching. Bye, everybody.